So we're on the page number 100 and the last paragraph. What to do in between the meditation sessions? Within the 24 hours, if we speak about the daily practice, so to spend the whole 24 hours in our practice for one day, then weeks, then years, then 10 years, then whole your life. And in such way, and from eons and eons, if we are able to practice like Adisha has stated, like the Bodhisattvas, if we are able to practice in the deeds of Bodhisattvas like the stars and the suns, if we are able to do such a practice, then as it is stated in the Guide to the Ways of Bodhisattvas, like once you have the bodhicitta, then your happiness will grow from one place to another. Then once someone has such a kind of bodhicitta, who will refrain from practice, engaging in such kind of practice? So the power of accumulation, the merits, depends on your motivations. And it also depends on the conditions, which makes a big difference in guiding towards. And such a kind of feeling, which has been supported by the wisdom, and if such a kind of skillful means, which has been supported by the wisdom, then it could directly lead to the enlightenment. And the great Bodhisattvas, they pray that they be reborn in the hell realm as long as possible. And as far as the hell realms are extinct, and may I never attain the enlightenment, the state of Buddhahood. And such a kind of intention. So even though they doesn't intend to attain the enlightenment, the state of Buddhahood, but they automatically reach there. For us, we always aspire to attain enlightenment, and even the state of Buddhahood, we wanted to attain it for our own sake. And that's the reason why we are always left behind. And from such a kind of texts, like this, the Lamrim, and also the six wisdom texts composed by Nagarjuna, and such kind of texts, we have to practice in these things. So we have to make the difference between the on session and the between these sessions. So therefore, the virtuous practice during the meditation, between the meditation session has to be continued, has to be reached to the main session, then from the on session to the medieval session. So this is the way of practicing the virtuous practice, and the two sessions has to be combining with together and one after the another. So therefore, many of us, just we do some rituals, prayers, we have tried to mentor mind a little bit. But when we are out of that kind of meditative attentiveness, then in those between the intervals, we are just lost in anything. So even those, if we speak from the bad point, then all our minds are being in the influence of attachment and desire. So it's very important to practice difference between both the on session and between the sessions. So what to do in between the meditation sessions? In general, there are many things to be done between meditation sessions, such as obeisance, circumambulation, and recitations, prayers. However, the principal thing to do in this context is as follows. We're on the page number 101, in the first paragraph. After you have made an effort to meditate in the actual session or at the point of ending the session, you might not continue to rely on mindfulness and vigilance, and might in this completely let go of what should be sustained, the object of meditation, its subjective aspects. If you do so, your progress will be extremely small. In addition, follow the instruction called consolidation. Furthermore, learn the four preconditions which are causes that really produce the parts of serenity and insight, restraining the sensory faculties, acting vigilantly, appropriate diet, and striving to practice without sleeping at the wrong time and acting properly at the time of sleep. First, restraining the sensory faculties. There are five parts to this section. The first of which is that which you restrain the sensory faculties. How to restrain the sensory faculties of two parts, and they are as follows. Guiding the sensory faculties. And what to be got is the six sensory photos. And from what we have to guard is from the destruction, six different kinds of destructions. After the six consciousness arise based upon their sensory objects and faculties, the mental consciousness produces attachment for the six attractive sensory objects or hostility toward the six unattractive ones. We're on page number 102. So therefore, nowadays we sometimes, when we watch the televisions, when we browse through the internet, through the different technologies to see the, what's happening all over the world and the news and such kind of things are, so what do we call it, political or any reality things happening all over the world, it's very important to gain our information. This is something that we need to do. But other than that, a source of distractions, just to watch some movies or songs, if you pay much attention to it and if you are attached to it, then it is a source of distraction. And it is a great obscuration and obstacle. Even for myself, when somebody gifted me some television sets, even I have some, but I have been over 3-4 years, I have never seen any kind of television. When I have time, I used to read the texts and sutras, and I used to listen to the news, especially the BBC news. What is being broadcasted in BBC is very real and true. Whatever happening in all parts of the world is very immediate, I can reach it. But without watching the television, it has been about 3-4 years, and I find it's not much beneficial to watch television. So like for you, even inside the monasteries, when you have used the computer sets, from the using of computers and these things, of course, there is a beneficial qualities, and you can use it for good, reasonable. But if you use it as a distraction, then it is a great obscuration for your practices and attaining the enlightenment. It will be a source of distraction for your five sensory faculties, five sensory consciousness. So then it's even better that you just go out of the monastery and live a normal lay life. There won't make any difference. But since if you are inside the monastery, claiming yourself as a monk who has come left your home, then you have your mannerism, your behavior should be compatible to that. Even the teachers, abbots, disciplinary masters, so everyone has to think about it without forgetting. So they have to remind the monks at time and again about these things. Practicing restraint with the six sensory faculties is actually stopping the sensory faculties. In the outer world, I mean, in general world, the source of gaining happiness for the source of gaining mental happiness is a kind of like listening to the music and watching movies. Then there is no option for that. For them, what is the meaning of happiness? Happiness is something which arises from five sensory consciousness. So they consider happiness as something arising out of the five sensory consciousness. They doesn't realize the happiness coming out of the mental consciousness. And they are not much attentive to it. Even the scientists who are analyzing or examining the consciousness, but they are not able to distinguish or differentiate between the sensory and the mental consciousness. I have been telling them about a few years, if you examine the how the brain works and how the mental consciousness or thoughts arise out of the sensory consciousness without in any relation to the sensory consciousness, when we arise the mental thoughts, how the brain functions at that time. And nowadays, some scientists are paying some attention to it. But in general, in the Western countries, as we see, the science generally comes from Western countries. And when they speak about consciousness, they meant mainly for the five sensorial consciousness. And in order to be fulfilled or in order to have experience pleasant, so the only way of doing that is to listen to good music, to see good things, and to taste some good foods. So this is the only source of being happy. And this is due to the material progress. So apart from the sensorial happiness, the happiness derived from sensory, and if they are not able to derive the happiness from mental, then it will be very difficult for them to spend a time, even one day for them, without the sensorial pleasures. Some of my friends in Swiss, they say that when they stay at home and think about the prayers mentally, they say it's really, they feel very calm at home. When these other people who do not have such kinds of pleasures through mental consciousness, if they do not have something to listen to a good song or to see some movies, they are not able to even spend their time. For Tibetans, when we do the normal ritual, normal chantings, the daily prayers, we do not need any kind of external source of pleasures. It's a real source of happy and joyful. And even when we become old, it really helps us in mentally thinking about ourselves. And for those who are not able to think, and when they become age, when they grow old, when they have nothing to do, it becomes very difficult even for to spend a day for them. So the reason is that they are not able to generate or gain the happiness derived from the mental consciousness or mentally. So therefore, we pay more importance to generate, to gain happiness through mental happiness. And all the affliction or disturbing emotions come through the thought and mentally. So in order to stop those afflicted or disturbing emotions, we have to use the mental power. But even if you have some sensory pleasures, the afflicted disturbing emotions may not be so strong at for a moment. It is something like you have forgotten your worry, but it's not that you have decrease or you have lessened your worries. So how to lessen or make yourself more happy or more happy and decrease your sadness is that the source of all those worries and the problems, which is the mental consciousness, then you have to find the source. So which is the mental thing. So if you're able to find happiness out of it, then you will gain the genuine happiness. Then just a general description of having some pleasant feelings of sensorial happiness is something like taking a painkiller medicines. Even during that, while you take the painkiller medicine, you feel a kind of relief. But in reality, it was not a genuine relief. So if you are able to find the real genuine happiness from mentally, that is the real and genuine happiness, which will last for long. So for us who are the monks, who wear the monk's robe, saffron robe, we should never go under the destruction. For instance, if you don't let to engage those sensory objects, that will produce afflictions when, for instance, look at. Furthermore, guarding the sensory faculties means neither to take note of the six sensory objects, nor to imagine them, and to achieve this through restraint, even when a sinful attitude such as attachment arises due to forgetfulness. An abundance of afflictions. Take note of refers to perceiving and paying attention to the intentional or unintentional appearance of sensory objects, such as forms that you should not look at. Imagining can refer to the mental consciousness, apprehension of sensory objects that produce attachment, hostility, and ignorance. The real practice of Dharma comes during the between the sessions. If you're really a practice of the Catholic practitioners, then they kneel down and they close their eyes and they pray to the God. But when we come to a Buddhist temple, if you are inside a temple, you pray and do the practice. So, but when you are outside, then you have nothing, no practice. So the real practice of Dharma is not just during the on session, but during the between the sessions, you have to practice it. Restraining means protecting the mind from being afflicted and then setting it on something that is ethically neutral or virtuous. Here, the time for setting the mind on something that is unobscure and ethically neutral is not when the mind is apprehending a virtuous object of meditation, but at other times, such as during physical activities. We are on page number 103. The five actions of activity in temple are the actions of the body, walking in a designated area, going to one who is in accord with the teaching, entering a passageway for the sake of receiving the teaching, standing in the presence of those whom you are going to see and who are in accord with the teaching, the abbot, the master, guru, and the like, or sitting at the full lotus posture upon a seat, and so on. Second, the actions of speech. Third, the actions of mind. Fourth, the actions of day and actions of night. Both of these refers to not sleeping in the daytime or in the first and last periods of the night. This also refers to physical and verbal actions. Furthermore, the above statement, sleeping in the middle period of the night, refers only to actions of night and actions of mind. Acting vigilantly with respect to the foundation, this is being prescribed mainly for the monks or the celibate ones. And even for the lay people, it will be, we have to practice something similar to that one. Acting vigilantly with respect to the above mentioned 10 foundations is as follows. When you begin either moment or activity right from the outset, act conscientiously and establish mindfulness with respect to that action. Imbued with both of these, analyze the elements of the situation and analyze how you should proceed, then think about and arrive at an understanding of the situation in light of what you have concluded. In this regard, there are four elements. The first element of basis. We are on the page number 104. Second, the element of direction. Third, the element of time. Fourth, the element of actions. No matter how many actions you undertake, you analyze to discover what will be happening and how to proceed, and then consider the situation in light of what you have concluded. For example, when you go out, keep in mind any precepts there may be on going out, such as go to another domicile in a very restrained manner. We are on the page number 105. Appropriate diet. An appropriate diet has four attributes: not eating too little, not eating too much, eating digestible and wholesome food. Not eating too much. This is because if you eat too much, your body will be heavy as you are carrying a burden. It will be hard to breathe in and out. Sleepiness and lethargy will increase. You will be unfit for any action, so you will have no strength for eliminating the afflictions. Third, eating digestible and wholesome food. For eating appropriate food, which does not produce afflictions. With such food, you do not create mischiefs and you stay happy. Moreover, the remedy for craving food lies within meditating on the force of food. There are three faults: the fault that arising from the causes of enjoyment, second, the fault that arises from digesting food. Contemplate how food produces such elements of the food as flesh and blood after it is digested in the middle or the last period of the night. Third, the five faults that come from looking for food. The five are as follows. The first, fault of procurement. While being tormented by heat and cold, you must make great effort in order to procure food and assemble its causes. Second, the fault of ruining close relationships. Even close relatives such as fathers and sons will dispute and fight with one another for the sake of food. The third, fault of insatiability. Fourth, the fault of lack of independence. Those who eat others' food experience much suffering when they fight with opponents on behalf of their leader. The fault that arises from wrongdoing. Despite all of this, there is some benefit to food. After all, the body depends upon it. Eat your food after you think. Since it is not correct to rely on food just for the sake of my body's maintenance, I will conduct myself in a pure manner in dependence on my body's maintenance. Benefactors and those who actually carry out acts of charity work so hard that their skin, flesh, and blood drive. Then they make their gifts with a wish for a special result. Also, Nagarjuna's friendly letter states, with an understanding that food is like medicine, eat it without hostility or attachment, not for haughtiness, might, or robustness, but only to maintain your body. How to practice diligently without sleeping at the wrong time, and how to act properly at the time of sleep. We had the last prayer of patient number 106. We are on the page number 107. There are teachings both for meditation sessions and for between meditation sessions with regard to restraining the sensory faculties and acting diligently, as well as this section on making effort to practice instead of sleeping. Therefore, here I have singled out those techniques for between sessions. Your conduct during sleep takes place between sessions, so do not treat even that as having no purpose. How should you sleep during the day and in the first of the three portions of the night? Spend your time doing virtuous activities, then sleep when the middle portion arrives. For by sleeping, you will enhance those elements of the body which are benefited by sleep. When you develop the body in that way, your body will be most serviceable for employment in both kinds of joys, perseverance in the growth of virtues, and this also will be helpful. There are four kinds of thoughts with which to fall asleep: the idea of illumination, second, mindfulness. This arises from having heard, thought, and meditated upon meaningful virtuous teachings. Pursue this practice until you have fallen asleep. And when you sleep, you have to generate a virtuous mind. If possible, try to meditate the compassion or Buddha Citta. Then if you are a little bit familiar with the tantric and deities, and if you can also visualize those things, it will be very beneficial. Even during the time of sleeping, if you are able to recollect your virtuous activities, and even when you wake up in the morning, the first moment where you wake up, the virtuous positive and the virtuous minds will generally occur by itself. The four kinds of thought with which to fall asleep: the idea of illumination, second, the mindfulness. In short, you will sustain your virtuous practice even when you are asleep. third, the vigilance. If you are someone who has practiced the tantric through the practice through the yoga of sleeping, and if you are able to recognize the dream as a dream during the dream while dreaming, even while dreaming, you will be able to practice. Even while dreaming, you will be able to dream independently. And most important, even during the sleeping or the dreaming, you will be able to meditate on certain aspects. For the idea of rising, this is three aspects. First, do not let the mind slip into a state of being completely overwhelmed by sleep. Instead, sleep very lightly like a deer, with the mind imbued with joyous perseverance. This will prevent heavy sleep and you will be able to awaken without oversleeping. Second thing, I will always practice staying awake as the Buddha taught, and then with great effort develop an aspiration to this end. With this, your sleep will now deviate from the sleep of a lion with the Buddha permitted. Third thing, just as I joyously persevere at cultivating virtues and not sleeping today, I will do the same tomorrow as well. This will prevent breaking the continuity of your aspiration to cultivate virtue. Even if you forget your aspiration, always work to make it stronger. This concludes the explanation of what to do in between the sessions. Even while leaving your fishes, if you are able to recite some certain kind of mantras, it's also a kind of practice. Which means you can practice even during the time of sleeping, during the time of dreaming. If you're able to realize your dreaming, then you can do some special kind of virtuous activities. Even when you are awake, when you walk, when you sleep, when you stay, or when you walk. So even during the meditative sessions, so whatever the things and activities you do, which comes in its own way, so all these activities can be turned into virtues. This concludes the explanation of what you do in the between sessions. Second, what do you do? This is now middle length lamrim. Page number 34, what do you do during the periods between sessions? Generally speaking, there are numerous practices enhancing the object, such as prostration, circumambulation, and recitation. However, the main point is that if you make an effort at the essence of the session and then during the intervals in which you leave the session, you let go carelessly without relying on mindfulness and introspection regarding the observed object and aspect, which are the causes of sustaining the meditation, the outcome will be very little. Knowing the right measures of food. Knowing the right measures of food means to give up eating too much or too little and to eat only at the amount that does not do damage to one's virtuous activities. In friendly letter, it also says, we are on the page number 35. For reasoning that foodstuffs are like medicine, depend on them without attachment or hatred. They are not meant for you to be seated or proud or fat, just to keep your body going. Exerting your receptive yoga without sleeping and what to do while lying down to sleep. This is 2 points. How to do when lying down to sleep and how to apply this to the intervals between all the meditations. These are 5 points: the time to lie down, the behavior of sleep, the mindfulness, introspection, the discrimination of getting off. The discrimination of getting off consists in projecting the thought, I will get off at this and that time. So back to Lamrim Chemo. We are in page number 109. Refuting the misconceptions about meditation, there are persons who have not begun to recognize that the classic scriptures, the term, Tibetan term gom, the meditation, which some people refers to as just the stabilizing meditations. When they speak about meditations, it's not about hearing or the concentrations. So people may be misguided or misinformed that the term meditation may be just referred to only for stabilizing meditation. When you meditate on the path, you should do only stabilizing meditation rather than repeatedly analyzing your object of meditation. For repeated analysis with discerning wisdom is only for times of study and reflection. Moreover, repeated analysis will prevent you from future attainment of Buddhahood because conceptual thought apprehends sense of true existence. Study and reflection and concentration is the causes of generating the meditations. Without studying at first, you will not be able to generate the concentration, the mind of concentrations. And without these two wisdoms, with these two as preceding these two, you will not be able to generate the wisdom of meditation. This is a nonsensical chatter of someone who is utterly ignorant of the crucial points of practice. For example, when somebody else explains to you and you listen to it, for example, in school, when the teacher explains, you listen to it, then you read the book and you generate a certain kind of understanding. That is called the wisdom based on concentration or wisdom. The wisdom which is based on just listening is not so stable, because if you see some other books which explains in a different way, or if you meet some other teacher which explains you in a different teacher, then you may feel like this is not right. So therefore, whatever the meaning or the topics which you have listened to, you have to think about it, you have to analyze it and examine it. So if this follows, even if you, for example, if you study the science, like you have to examine going to the laboratory and you have to generate a kind of understanding of knowing, a conviction based on it. Even for the Buddhist studies, you need to generate a conviction out of thinking and analyzing, looking at neighbors, looking at your roommates. If you have a roommate who is very short-tempered, if you have a friend with your room who is very short-tempered, then whether you will be happy or not. If you have a roommate or a neighbor who is very kind and compassionate, so if you have compared with these two neighbors, one which is very short-tempered and one which is very compassionate, then try to see who among them two are more happy. So then naturally you will come that the more compassionate one will be very happy and the one short-tempered will be never be happy. The one who is compassionate, you will see that even his room or the home will be something like the filled with the aroma or the air of compassionate and the love. Even if you just remember or the person who is short-tempered, you feel yourself angry or not happy. So in this world, we have about 70 billion people. All the people are same as they wish for happiness and doesn't wish of suffering. There is no one who doesn't cause the suffering for themselves intentionally, but ultimately everyone suffers. The real thing is they does not able to differentiate the cause of the suffering and the happiness. And maybe the reason is that when the conditions and the causes come temporarily, they look in this way as the conditions, the causes come by themselves, and they are not able to understand the causes properly and not able to engage in the causes which are relevant or which are compatible to the effect. And even though they need the happiness, but they doesn't engage in the causes of the happiness, and the sufferings continue to come without any break. So if you analyze, or if you think in this way, then the thinking, the wisdom arises out of thinking will come to you. Proper attention is based upon process. So the sublime wisdom which takes reality as its object arises from your cultivation of proper attention. We are on page number 110. I used to say that I am not able to sit in a posture way during a meditation, but through the analytical meditation, it helps me more in shaping my mind, or mentally it helps me more. When we speak about the omniscience mind, when we also speak about the perfection of wisdom, then the word, the wisdom itself, as it is stated in the Bodhisattva's Guide of Way, is stated that all the first five perfections are prescribed or taught as a means of generating the sixth perfection of wisdom. Even the faith itself, a great devotion, and the faith itself is being derived from the wisdom. The more intelligent one, followers, generate a faith which is backed by the wisdom. And for the non-intelligent disciples and the followers, they generate or they develop the faith without thinking about, without reasonings, and that is not stable. So the factor which really moves our mind, which moves us mentally, or which transforms us, is normally happen through the analytical meditation. Just as study must precede the wisdom that comes from study, and reflection must precede the wisdom that comes from reflection, so too meditation must precede the wisdom that comes from meditation. Therefore, it is said that the wisdom that comes from meditation is a product of the wisdom that comes from reflection. Thus, the depth of the wisdom that comes from your studies is commensurate with your studies. The breadth of your reflection is commensurate with this wisdom, while the depth of the wisdom that comes from your reflection is proportionate to your reflections. The magnitude of your practice of meditation corresponding to the depth of your wisdom and reflection, while your ability to stop faults and achieve good qualities is commensurate with the practice of meditation. Therefore, the scriptures and their commentaries say that study and reflection are very important for the practice of meditation. On indication of failure to recognize these critical points and not distinguish between the beginning, between those who are well trained in the sutras or tantras and those who have no training at all, we are on the page number 111, and they're not assigning the appropriate amount of practice. Another such indication is that meditators are criticized if they study or do research. This mistaken custom persists in Tibet. Meditating is making the mind take on the state or condition or the object of meditations. For example, meditating on compassion and meditating on faith means that the mind must be made to develop these qualities. Because of this, even the great translators sometimes use the term path of meditation, and at other times use the term conditioning, as in the phrase for Maitreya's ornament for clear knowledge. the paths of seeing and conditioning. Conditioning and meditation are synonyms. Furthermore, Venerable Maitreya says, as for the branch of certain differentiations, the path of seeing and the path of meditation, it is repeated reflection, comprehension, and definite discernment that constitute the path of meditation. Read the last paragraph of page number 111. I compose this in order to condition my own mind. We are on page number 112. Therefore, meditate continuously on any distribution, protection, purification, or enhancement of your body, resources, or merit. So the second question. Moreover, to claim that all conceptual thoughts involve the apprehension of science of true existence and thus prevents enlightenment is the worst possible misconception insofar as it disregards all discerning meditation. When we speak about conceptual thoughts, the rough conceptual thoughts, there is a way that they grasp or look at the objects or the things. But when all those grasps and the rough consciousness are not evident, then the very subtle form of consciousness. There is also classification of recollection and memories, even at such subtle level of consciousness. So in relation to that subtlety of that mind at that time, then there is also a category or something that we can point it as a kind of conceptual. So if we are able to look at the text in a, from the beginning to the end and to understand it in a whole way without just referring to just one word or one sentence, and if you just cling to just one word or sentence, then it will make a big mistake. The Westerners who pay interest to Tibetan Buddhism, for when they examine the words, they just look at the dictionary and they just pick up the word. And so when this word comes, they always think that the meaning is always the same. For example, the Tibetan word Dandam comes, which means the ultimate. In the sutra and the provision of wisdom comes, then this term Tibetan word Dandam, ultimate, only means like ultimate truth. For example, in the Madhyamika school, sometimes the relativity of ultimate also comes. Even in Tantra, the same word comes for different explanations. In the practice of Dzogchen, even for the same word, ultimate or Dandam, it can refer to different kind of philosophy and treaties and different meanings. Even the word may be same for all. To claim that all conceptual thought involves the apprehension of science of true existence and thus prevents enlightenment is the worst possible misconception. This is also a major cause of teaching's decline because those who have this misconception do not recognize the classic scriptures and their commentaries to be instructions and therefore belittle their value. So the great texts are mainly based on analytical meditation. So if you are able to analyze and examine it correctly, then you will find a taste out of it. The great texts composed by Nagarjuna and other great Indian masters. So without having such kind of examine power or intelligence, if you just follow by your faith or just as an instruction by your teacher and a master, then when some arguments comes or arise, my teacher just says this and I swear to it. So this is not based on reasoning. it's very important that we have a reasons to prove that this is this. And a kind of reasoning for self, like if you visualize yourself or think yourself. For example, as stated in Bodhisattva's Guide of Wit, the faults of self-centered feelings, the logical reasonings are collected from all the round. When Shantideva explains the self-centered feeling as the source of all the faults and ignorance, he uses all the logicals from the all perspectives. So that is the power of intelligence to put into use to prove logically with reasonings. So if that is not the case, then our brain is often not used. If, as you said, there are two types of meditation, analytical meditation and non-analytical stabilizing meditation, what kind of practice involves analytical meditation and what kind involves stabilizing meditation? Reply, I will explain this. Analytical meditation is necessary for meditation such as those on faith in the teacher. The great importance and difficulty in obtaining leisure and opportunity, death and impermanence. Read the last paragraph now. Similarly, when you think often about the unattractive characteristics of your enemy, you produce intense hatred. It is the same in the case of your meditation on any of these types of practices. Page number 113. Second paragraph. Not knowing this system, some even propound, if you are a scholar, you only do analytical meditation, adapts only to stabilizing meditation. This is not the case because each must do both. The scholar must achieve stabilizing meditation such as meditative serenity, while the adept must pursue such practices as incense. Faith in the teacher. Furthermore, both the sutra section of scripture and tantra section of scripture very frequently say that you must use discernment for both of these methods for meditation. Where the last paragraph now? Furthermore, by using discerning wisdom to conduct analytical meditation on the meaning of these scriptures, you understand the many attributes of good qualities of the three jewels and the like, and you then greatly increase the faith associated with these attributes, etc. Also, once you have used analytical meditation to comprehend the many faults of psychic existence, you develop great disgust for and disenchantment with cyclic existence, and you then see the benefits of liberation from many perspectives. We're in page number 114. If you do too much analysis with discernment and sustain that in meditation, you will hinder your concentration, which is one pointed upon a single object of meditation. So you will not achieve firm concentration. I will explain this. Concentration allows you to willfully fix your attention on any single object of meditation. At the time of focusing your mind to a certain focal object, at that time, any kind of distraction, even the mind may be a virtuous one, has to be averted. So at that time, it is important that our mind should be single-pointedly on the focal object. This is the way to think during the meditative sessions. We are in the last prayer right now, page number 114. Likewise, you initially use your discerning wisdom to meditate repeatedly on faults, such as the afflictions, the secondary afflictions, karmic effects of wrongdoing, and the faults of cyclic existence. According to their order in scripture, this makes you completely displeased or disenchanted. By bringing this to mind, you turn away from the group of non-virtuous things and clear away these defilements like burning gold in fire. Next, you use your discerning qualities of the wisdom, the great importance of the leisures and opportunity, good qualities of the three jewels, virtuous karma and its effects, and the benefits of the spirit of enlightenment, again accordingly to their order in scripture. Well, page number 115. In the same way, the noble Asanga says, for example, in order for smiths or their skilled apprentices to purify silver or gold of all defilements and impurities, they burn it in fire and wash it in water. By doing this, they understand that they can make it into this or that ornament by way of their service, ability, and playability. Then those who know the appropriate craft, their smiths and their skilled apprentices, use the smith's tools to transform the metal into whatever kind of ornament they want. Likewise, yogis and the yoginis become disenchanted by the simply not turning their minds toward any impurities or defilement, such as the coveting. This creed delights simply by not turning towards the unhappiness of the afflicted mind and being inclined towards joy in the group of virtues. Therefore, you will easily attain the firm concentration which pleases the learned to a degree commensurate with your cultivation of the trainings, beginning with faith in the teacher and ending with the engaged spirit of the enlightenment. Not only must you sustain stabilizing meditations after you become free of both excitement and laxity, but you must also sustain analytical meditations. Because of this, we are on page number 116. However, those who know how to bring all these explanations into practice seem barely to exist at all. Therefore, you should also create another concise presentation of what to sustain in meditation. Whether you understand that all of the scriptures or personal instructions follow only from whether you know this meditative process. Therefore, there is a need to establish this in a more detailed manner. Nevertheless, fearing verbosity, I have not written more than just this. This concludes. The explanation of refutation of misconception concerning the matter of sustaining meditation. We are back to the middle-length lamrim. Well, page number 36, in ornament for Mahayana Sutra, it says here, first of all, proper mental attention arises in dependence on study, and from proper mental attention, again, the exalted wisdom with the meaning of perfect reality as its object arises. With regard to the meditations that, according to this statement, should be done on all four activities, giving away, granting, purifying, and increasing, with respect to each of the three, body, possessions, and root of virtue, they are both analytical meditations sustained through analysis by means of the wisdom of individual investigation and stabilizing meditation in which the mind is placed single-pointedly without analysis.
Thank you.
We are on page number 37. Although some who do not know this approach claim that if you are a scholar, you should only do analytical meditation, while the sadhus should only do stabilizing meditation. This is not so, because it is necessary to do both one by one, given that the learned also learn to achieve calm abiding, and sadhus also need to achieve strong faith in the spiritual teacher and the like. Therefore, the understanding the repeated analysis with the wisdom of individual investigation belongs to the context of hearing and the reflecting, rather than the context of practice, is inadmissible. The understanding that all conceptions appear in science and therefore create obstacles to the enlightenment has the fault of not discriminating between improper mental attention, the conception of true existence, and proper mental attention, the conception of reality. The idea it is necessary to achieve a non-conceptual meditative stabilization that allows you to place the mind on a single object in whatever way at will, and if you do a lot of analytical meditation beforehand, it will become an obstacle to the arising of that meditative stabilization, is not upheld in the present instructions. Similarly, just as the mind turning away from unwholesome sight emerges cleans of defilements on the occasion of meditating on the positive qualities of the spiritual friend and the preciousness of the freedoms and endowments, the positive qualities of the three jewels, wholesome actions, and their effects and the benefits of bodhicitta, by meditating on these positive qualities again and again with the wisdom of individual investigation, the mental attention of the mind becomes more tent or sincere, whereby it is like washing gold with water. Through the mind approaching the wholesome sight and delighting in it, the mind is moistened by the virtuous qualities. When it has been transformed in that way, whatever you wish to achieve, whether calm abiding or a special insight, will be achieved without difficulty when the mind is focused on it. That is why such analytical meditation is the best means of achieving a non-conceptual meditative stabilization. This is how Arya Sangha also put it. By way of analogy, when a smith or a skillful apprentice burns gold or silver in a fire and washes it with water a couple of times in order to discard all impurities and slack, it becomes supple and workable for this and that ornament. Their method makes very vivid in this regard. Through their know-how that of a smith or a skillful apprentice, any manner of ornament desire is then met with their smith's tools. Furthermore, the main adverse condition to the main mind abiding on an object continuously is twofold, laxity and excitement. If you have a strong and constant awareness that sees the positive qualities of the three jewels and so forth, it is quite easy to overcome positive qualities. So till here we have completed the reliance on the master. So from here on, how, after relying on the master, how we have to practice. Now it is necessary to show the stages through, right back to the great treatise of Lamrim, Lamrim Shemo, page number 117. The stages of how the students train their minds after they have relied on the teacher. The stages, it has stood an exhortation to take full advantage of a life of leisure and opportunity. How to take full advantage of a life of leisure and opportunity. First, taking full advantage of a life of leisure and opportunity is explained in terms of three aspects: identifying leisure and opportunity, contemplating its great importance, and contemplating the difficulty of attaining it. Leisures, the verse summary of the perfection of wisdom, 8,000 lines, says, through ethical discipline you eliminate the eight conditions that lack leisures and many circumstances in the life as an animal. Through it you always attain leisure. According to this, leisure means freedom from rebirth in any of the eight conditions that lack leisure. These eight conditions are stated in the friendly letter. To be reborn with wrong views or without a conqueror's vote, or as an animal, a hungry ghost, and hell being. An uncultured person in a border region, a stupid and mute person, or a deity of long life, is to be afflicted by one of the eight faults that are conditions which lack leisure. After you have attained leisure, which is freedom from this, strive to end birth. With three of these eight, you are unable to know what to adopt and what to cast aside. Being reborn in a broad border region in which the four types of followers are not active, being mute, stupid, and having incomplete sensory faculties, which means incomplete limbs, arisen, and so on, and lacking a conqueror's word, meaning both where a Buddha is not arisen. If you have a wrong view, which misconceives the three jewels, karma and its effects, and former and future lives as non-existent, you do not believe in the sublime teachings. You will have great difficulty in developing a religious attitude. If you are born in any of the three miserable realms, and even if you do develop a little bit, you will be unable to practice because you will be tormented by sufferings. Verbation number 119. The second outline, opportunity. The five aspects of opportunity that pertains to yourself. According to the Sarvarga levels, the five are being human, being born in a central region, having complete sensory faculties, having a reversible karma, and having faith in the source. Being born in a central region means that you are born in an area wherein the four types of followers are active. Having complete sensory faculties means that you are not stupid or mute and that you have your main limbs, secondary limbs, eyes, ears, and the likes intact. Having reversible karma means that you have not done or caused others to commit the five deeds of immediate retribution. Faith in the source means that you have faith in discipline, which is the root from which all mundane and supermundane virtues arises. Here, discipline refers to all three scriptural collections. These five are called aspects of opportunity that pertains to yourself because they are included in your mind stream and are favorable conditions for practicing the teaching. Page number 120. The first four aspects of opportunity that pertain to others are at present incomplete for us. So in summary, they are the 18 factors of leisure and opportunities. And as a condition for practicing the Dharma, leisure and advantages meant as a condition for practicing Dharma. And as I have stated yesterday, we have to contemplate, we have to think through with the power of our intelligence, through the analytical or examine with our wisdoms. Generally what we see, generating faith or devoting in the Dharma is only seen in humans, not in the animals. But for the animals, they have love, and if you care them, if you love them, they also become loyal to you, and they will be also loving you. But in terms of faith and devotion, it's very difficult. The reason is that because faith and devotion, we have to think about a logical reasoning. So therefore, it's only the faith and devotion is existing only in the human society, not in other physical basis. And among the faith, the teachings of the Buddha to transform our mind is not just from faith. Faith is not only means of transforming our mind. What are the causes which disturbs our emotion, which disturbs us mentally? So looking at those causes and conditioners, if you are able to know the faults and the obscurations, so those antidotes, consciousness, if you practice them, the happiness within you will grow. So in this way, you will be able to practice the Dharma. So if you're reborn in animal realms, you will not be able to practice any kind of teachings of Dharma. So therefore, they have been regarded as non-leisures and having no advantages of human rebirth. So even if you are born in a place where there are no religions, it's very difficult to practice. And even if there is a religion, but if your mental faculties, if your sensory faculties and limbs and the parts are not intact, it will be difficult. As Pamukkala Rinpoche says that, if you're reborn in the remote places where there is not even single vote and sentence sounds of Dharma being heard, so if you contemplate in this way, first the countless number of sentient beings, and also the time, the events, the darkness events, but we are born in the events of light, whether the suns and the moons generally, and among them from the numberless sentient beings, we are born as a human. Then if you, among those human beings, there are very few who have both the lessons and advantages. Is very seldom and very few. Even among those who claim themselves to be followers of Buddha, but the real practitioners are very few. So first, identifying the lessons and advantages of human rebirth, and such a kind of human rebirth, that kind of human rebirth, which possess all the qualities, you have to visualize, you have to think that we are very fortunate to have attained such a human rebirth. So we have to take the essence out of it. And the way to take the essence out of it is practicing or training our mind. So thinking about the beneficial qualities of gaining those human rebirths and thinking about the reality, how it is difficult to attain such things, then one need to practice the teachings. Then second is contemplating the great importance of leisure and opportunity. Until that, animals strive merely to avoid suffering and achieve happiness. Therefore, if you do this and do not practice the pure teachings for the sake of achieving lasting happiness, then you are like an animal despite being born in a happy realm. As Chandra Gomin's letter to a student says, we are in page number 121, just as an elephant calf curves a few mouthfuls of grass that grows at the edge of a deep pit and falls into the chasm without obtaining any, so it is with those who desire the joys of this world. Not just any life will be sufficed for the practice of such pure teachings in general or for the practice of the Mahayana path in particular. Consequently, you must attain such a life as was described earlier. The letter to a student, with a human life you attain the spirit of enlightenment, which is the basis for the path to the state of a Sugata, which brings great mental force and which equips you to lead all beings. Neither Nagas, demigods, Vidyadharas, Gurudharas, Kinaras, nor snakes attain this birth. Also, the descent into the womb sutra states, even though you have been born a human with such limitless sufferings, you still have the best of situations. It is difficult to attain this even in 10 million eons. Even when the deities die, the other deities say, may you have a heavy rebirth. By heavy rebirth, they mean the human rebirth. Thus, even the deities hold human life as something toward which they aspire. On page number 122, as Arya Sura says, human life plants a seed for going beyond cyclic existence, the supreme seed of glorious enlightenment. Human life is a stream of good qualities, better than a wish-granting jewel. Who here will attain it and then waste it? And also engaging in the bodhisattva deed states, there is nothing more diluted and nothing more confused than for me to have found such leisure and yet not to cultivate virtue. After I have recognized this, if I remain idle through confusion, great sorrow will befall me at the time of my death. Furthermore, Kisha Tomtenpa asks Chengawa, are you mindful that you have a human life endowed with leisures and opportunity? Chengawa replied, each time I enter into meditation, I recite, now I have independence and favorable conditions. If I do not take full advantage of this time, I will plunge into the abyss and fall under the control of others who will lift me out. Thinking about the importance of the human rebirth is that this is the qualities that you can also attain the greater human rebirths. And for the ultimate goal, you can also have the potential to attain nirvana, or the liberation from samsara and even enlightenment. To be liberated from samsara, and more important is to practice the mindful enlightenment, the bodhicitta mind. The kind of bodhicitta, the powerful bodhicitta that we can generate it on a human rebirth, human being, can never be generated any other kind of physical basis. So this kind of relations and advantages, just for, even for attaining enlightenment, it is one of the best and most suitable physical basis, even from the tantric practice. To be reborn in the heavens and the pure land, those kind of bodhisattvas who, while attaining the clear light, the meditative state, so the human rebirth with all these qualities is considered very important even for them. Page number 122. Sorry, page number 123. Second paragraph. In this way, this life is very important in terms of attaining a higher status and certain goodness. If I were to waste it and not strive day and night to create the causes of these two goals, it will be as if I were returning empty-handed from a land of jewels. And also, I will be bereft of happiness in the future and will not obtain a life of leisure. Without leisure, I will undergo continual suffering. Thus, what kind of self-deception is worse than this? As Arya Surya says, those who have obtained a human life rich in virtues through a collection of merit or innumerable aeons, and who then, due to confusion in this life, fail to accumulate even the slightest treasure of merit, will in future lifetimes enter the house of unbearable sorrow, like the traders who go to a land of jewels and return home empty-handed. Blessing for tea. Praise to Lama Tsongkhapa, who is founder of the Gelugpa tradition. And his two main disciples. May I offer this to the four Lama Tsongkhapa and his two noble sons.
So we have so such a powerful body that we have, that so with such a potential, comes from causes and conditions, and it's these causes and conditions must be actually created by oneself. We cannot actually expect it from others. And therefore, if you think about yourself now, ourselves, what we think, we're full of negative thoughts and emotions, and then what we do is create negative actions, so that we would actually suffer in the future. So we as religious and Dharma practitioners, if we are like this, then there's no need to mention about how the people who have no Dharma would act in their life. So we all have some enthusiasm or interest in practicing the Dharma, but we say, oh, this life I have not been able to create or causes for Dharma practice, but, or we say, or this year I have not been able to do, or then I will practice Dharma in the next years or next days and so forth. We kind of delay in our practice of the Dharma. So Dharma practice is not about changing our attire, but we have to think the long-term effect, long-term benefit, and most importantly, we have to reduce this self-cherishing and think all of us, including yourself, are in the same boat and not wanting suffering but wanting happiness. And so we think about bodhicitta. Of course, the real bodhicitta explanation genuine bodhicitta will come later, but if you have a good heart, even a degree of good heart, then you will actually be able to reduce anxiety within yourself. And because of that, it will reduce. You will have reduced or less, more peace of mind. And so we have to make our goal as the cultivation of bodhicitta right from the beginning be able to actually take the rest of the practices that we are going through as requirements, preliminaries to that cultivation of bodhicitta, and so which is very precious. And so next, 124, contemplating the difficulty of attaining leisure and opportunity. Lamruchamo, moreover, whether you start from a happy realm or a miserable realm, it is difficult to obtain such leisure and opportunity. For the Buddha states, in the basis of discipline, that those who die in the miserable realms and are reborn there are similar in number to the dust particles on the great earth, whereas those who are reborn from there into happy realms are similar in number to the dust particles on the tip of a fingernail. Furthermore, those who die in both types of happy realms, human and divine, and are reborn in the miserable realms are similarly in number to the dust. Similarly, number two, the dust particles on the great earth, while those who die in happy realms and are reborn there are similar in number to the dust particles on the tip of a fingernail. Why is a human life of leisure and enjoyment so difficult to obtain? It is because beings of the happy realms, humans and the like, are frequently involved in such ignoble activities such as the 10 non-virtues. Because of this, they are reborn in the miserable realms. As Aryadeva's 400 stanza states, humans for the most part are involved in things ignoble. Therefore, most ordinary beings will surely go to the miserable realms. As engaging in bodhisattva deeds, on page number 25, says, if I do not cultivate, even when I have this chance to do so, what virtue will I cultivate in a miserable realm, completely confused and suffering? So just staying alone without doing anything will not be able to create virtue. So we have to use our this life of precious life of humans and use our intelligence. So therefore it says, if I do not cultivate virtue, even when I have the chance to do so, so these verses from engaging in bodhisattva deeds are being read through on page number 125. Quam, when I experience the suffering of the miserable realms, I will be extinguishing previous bad karma, and then I will be reborn in a happy realm. Hence, getting out of miserable realms is not difficult. The reply to this, while you are experiencing the suffering in the miserable realms, you are constantly accumulating sins. Therefore, although you may die in a miserable realm, you will continue to be reborn in miserable realms. Because of this, getting out of the miserable realms is difficult, and there's engaging in the bodhisattva deeds says this, experiencing only the effects of that karma, you will not get out. While experiencing the effects, you create other sins. After you have reflected on the difficulty of obtaining a human life of leisure and opportunity in this way, develop the desire to take full advantage of this such a life. Think, if I use this life for wrongdoing, it is extremely wasteful. In light of this, I will spend my time practicing the sublime dharma. And Nagarjuna's friendly letter states these. There are quotations from Nagarjuna's friendly letters and also quotation few lines from a letter to a student by Chandragami. Furthermore, the great yogi said to Jenga, do it a little at a time. Jenga replied, I understand this, but this leisure and opportunity are difficult to obtain. And Bodhava said, and so meditate until you attain attitude indicated in these stories. In order to develop this sort of fully qualified desire to take full advantage of a life of leisure, you must reflect on its four elements as follows. So what is said in the engaging in bodhisattva deeds should be given thought. So bodhisattva, Shantideva says, the color and smell and so forth of a lotus comes from its own causes. So right from the beginning of the evolution of this world, the particles that compose, that constitute the external world of material world and the sentient beings' body are same. They have the same origin. But because of the different combination and structure of these elements and particles, they form different matters. And then they form different forms and shapes, and then they also give rise to different colors and so forth. And so, Shantideva makes the point that all these are because of the previous causes and conditions that give rise to them. Whereas he says, this suffering and suffering, pain and pleasure that we experience are, which are without beginning, come from karma. So he makes a difference here with regard to the material things coming from their own causes and conditions, but then the experiences of suffering and pleasure coming from their karma, the sentient beings' karmas. So of course we talk about the environmental effect of our karma. And so the external world and these materials have some influence on us, but so earlier we talked about the four different reasonings or principles, the principle of functioning nature, relativity, and argument. So experience, when we talk about suffering and pleasure, we are talking about experience, which has to happen on the basis of some mind. And then, dependent on the motivation, when we do something, and then it's called doing a karma or creating a karma. Whereas the inanimate things, of course, have some effect on the beings who interact with them. And so we have to think about them. And then there are the elements, the subtle elements that are inside and outside. And so how they actually are connected with each other or related with each other. If we look into the Tantra and also the Sutra teachings, then we actually have to see how these, how our experiences come as a result of karma. So, of course, by cultivating bodhicitta and understanding of emptiness, it is true that we will reach enlightenment, Buddhahood. But we have to also think about the substantial cause which has that potential to lead us to attainment of the three Buddha bodies. So we have to think through all these points. So around 40 years ago in Dharamsala, when I first taught Lamrim Chemo, there were a few of the... There was Gerong Kyerpen, a former abbot of Jebong Losaling. So I asked him where there is no sentient being living, but the places are covered with snow covered, and there would be some drop of waters dripping from cliffs. And he said, I asked him what kind of karma could have caused that, and he said, the process of the working of the karma is something inconceivable to us. So, of course, we can easily say that, but I was not satisfied with his answer. So, later on, when I found these lines in Shantideva's Bodhisattvacharya Avatara about the cause and conditions giving rise to the different colors and so forth, and then karma giving rise to suffering, and I thought maybe this is how karma works. So all of us don't want suffering, but want happiness. And so achieving our goal of happiness and overcoming our suffering is dependent on the dharma, the holy dharma. It is related to our mind. And so those actions which actually give happiness to others and are positive, and those which give suffering to others are negative. And so the non-virtuous actions come from the three poisons of desire or attachment, anger, and ignorance. So here the holy dharma need not be referred to only Buddhism, but we can see the Christians also engaging in all kinds of actions of adopting virtue and discarding non-virtues, and also the Hindus do so same. So not harming others, but helping them helps to create dharma or practice dharma. And so here we are, the point is being made in relation to Buddhism. And so it's true that the practice of dharma is related. So the point being made here is, in order to develop this sort of fully qualified desire to take full advantage of life of leisure, you must reflect on the four elements, and the four elements are given here. So the need to practice the teaching, because all living beings only want happiness and do not want suffering, and because achieving happiness and alleviating suffering depend only on practicing the teaching, the ability to practice, because you are endowed with the external condition of teacher and the internal conditions, leisure and opportunity, the need to practice in this lifetime, because if you do not practice, it will be very difficult to obtain leisure and opportunity again for many lifetimes, and the need to practice right now, because there is no certainty when you will die. Among these, the third stops the laziness of giving up, which thinks, I will practice the teaching in future lives. The fourth stops the laziness of engagement, which thinks, although I should practice in this lifetime, it is enough to practice later on and not to practice in my early years, months, and days. and therefore it is acceptable to create a list of three qualities by subsuming these two into one, practicing quickly. We now move to Lamrim middle length. The stages of training the mind: once you have to rely on a spiritual teacher. Through rules, the essence of many worlds of animals and eight unfree states are abandoned, you win constant leisure. Accordingly, the leisure consists in freedom from the eight unfree states. And then there for unfree states of humans and for non-human unfree states. And the former live in one region. As for the long-lived gods, the commentary on the friendly letters discusses two types. The former lives in one region of fourth concentration, great result, as if in a solitary place far away from a village. The latter are ordinary beings born in the formless realms. In discourse on the eight unfree states, the gods of the desire realm, who are constantly distracted by activities of desire, and are explained to be long-lived gods. The five personal endowments are to be human birth in the center, unimpaired senses, no perverted deeds, and faithful in the basis. The five endowments conditioned by others are said to be the Buddha arrived and having taught holy dharma, the teachings are abiding and being followed. There are hearts with loving concerns for others. And considering the great value of leisure and endowments, if no practice of the completely pure dharma for the sake of lasting happiness comes about at all, you would be like an animal despite your birth in a higher realm, since animals also endeavor merely to attain happiness and eliminate suffering until they die. For the accomplishment of Mahayana path, a basis like the one explained earlier is necessary. In a letter to a student, it says, "The base of the path of those going to bliss, the tool for leading beings, that very strength of mind, a strength that human beings have gained, that path has not found, has not been found by gods or nagas, nor by asuras, not by garudas, vidyadharas, kinaras, and maharagas. Furthermore, some gods of the desire realm with a strong predisposition from having previously trained in the path on a human basis are suitable as a basis for seeing the truth for the first time. But it is impossible to attain the Arya path for the first time on an upper realm basis. However, as explained before, the majority of the desire realm gods are said to be in an unfree state, and therefore they are not the best basis for attaining the path for the first time. Again, inhabitants of the continents of Uttarakura are unsuitable for a basis for vows, which is why the basis of the three continents are praised, and among them especially the inhabitants of the Jambudvipa, this world. Consequently, why would I act in such a way that an excellent base like the one that I have gained does not have a result? If I do not make it meaningful, could there be a greater self-betrayal and a bigger stupidity having passed through many perilous places of unfreedom, such as the lower realms again and again, if I were to go back to those? Places, forsaking this one-off liberation as meaningless, it would be like turning mindless as those stupefied by a magic spell. By way of thoughts like these, you should meditate again and again. And then engaging the Bodhisattva contact says, having found this kind of leisure, not to cultivate what's virtue, not betray, no betrayal could be greater. Nothing is more deluded than this. Having found that, and having found this place so rare, hard to find and beneficial, if I, well aware of it, were to be led to that hell again, as though deluded by magic spells, has my mind here wasted away? Through what delusion I did not know either. Goodness, what has become of my mind? Thus, you should also consider the methods that allow you to easily accomplish by means of this basis the courses, giving ethics, patience, and so on, of an excellent body of high status, excellent resources, and an excellent non-retinue, which are greatly meaningful not only from an ultimate but also from a temporary point of view. If you do not apply yourself day and night to the course of the two objectives, by means of this greatly meaningful basis, it would seem like returning empty-handed from an island of precious jewels. In basis of scriptural transmission, it says that beings who die and migrate from the lower realms and the happy realms to the lower realms are like the dust of the great earth, and that the beings who are born from there into the happy realms are like the dust taken up in the tip of a fingernail. Therefore, precious human rebirths are difficult to find from both the happy and the lower realms. If you wonder just why they are so difficult to find, it says in 400 stanzas, for most part, people fully embrace the sight that is unholy. Consequently, common beings mostly go to the lower realms. So accordingly, there are many humans and other beings who mostly hold on to the side of the 10 non-virtuous actions, and that is also why, consequently, they go to the lower realms. Furthermore, if for each moment of anger and the like to the bodhisattva, you have to spend 1 aeon in hell without respite, the negativities accumulated over many lifetimes, which are not common to fruition or nor overcome by the antidote in which are present in your own continuum, will doubtless cause you to spend many eons in the lower realms. So while having met with a qualified spiritual master, and you have found this human rebirth and teachers who give you the teachings, then how do you actually make this life meaningful? Though how to take full advantage of the life of leisure and atonement, which has two parts, how to develop certain knowledge of the general presentation of the path, the actual way to take full advantage of the life of leisure and opportunity. And regarding the first, the way to develop certain knowledge of general presentation of the path itself has two parts. How all the scriptures are included within the paths of the three types of persons. In the beginning, a person who is to become a Buddha develops the spirit of enlightenment. In the middle, this person accumulates the collections of merit and sublime wisdom. And in the end, this person actualizes perfect Buddhahood. All these actions are solely for the benefit of living beings. Therefore, all the teachings given by the Buddha simply accomplish the welfare of living beings. This being the case, the welfare of living beings is what you should accomplish as well. This welfare is twofold, the provisional goal of high status as a human or deity, and the final goal of certain goodness, of liberation or omniscience. Between these two, many of the Buddha's statements pertain to the attainment of temporary goal of high status. All of these statements are included in the teachings for a person of genuine small capacity, or the teachings shared with such a person, because persons of small capacity do not work very much on behalf of this life. On behalf of this lifetime, but they diligently strive for the excellent high states of human or divine rebirths in future lifetimes by engaging in the cultivation of these courses. The lamp of the path to enlightenment know to be least those persons who diligently strive to attain solely the joys of psychic existence by any means for their welfare alone. There are two kinds of certain goodness, the liberation that is mere freedom from cyclic existence and the sublime state of omniscience. Many of the Buddha's statements pertain to the vehicle of the Pratyeka Buddha and the Shravakas. All of these statements are included in the teachings for a person of actual medium capacity or the teachings shared with such a person, because persons of medium capacity develop disenchantment with all of the cyclic existence and then make their goal their own liberation from the cyclic existence. Then they then enter the path of the three trainings, the methods for attaining liberation. And then there is quotation from the lamp for the path of enlightenment, defining the beings with medium scope. And then the elder, then the elder's lamp for the collection of deeds states, so why the students are led in stages using the training of the three types of persons. So the purpose of leading students by means of the path to three parts of the three types of persons. I have given an explanation of the three types of persons. However, the stages of the path for the person of great capacity also includes the paths for the other types, two types of persons in their entirety. Thus, these two paths are parts or branches of the Mahayana path. So, therefore, once you have developed the desire to take full advantage of this human life and leisure, an opportunity explained before, you must know how to take it full advantage of it. With respect to this, Bhavavivika's heart of the middle way states, these bodies are insubstantial like banana trees and bubbles. Who would not give them a substance that is like Mount Meru, but by making them conditions for helping others? These bodies are the basis of sickness, old age, and death. Those who have good character and compassion make them in each moment a basis for promoting happiness in others. This life of leisure is free of great conditions. Eight conditions of non-leisure with the lamp of sublime teaching make good use of this life, leisure, through the deeds of a person of great capacity. Thus enter the Mahayana with the thought, day and night I will conduct myself as a person of great capacity, making use of this body of mine, which is a home for illness, a basis for suffering of old age and the like, and which lacks an essence like a banana tree or a water bubble. And from the outset, from the outset, one should guide students through the practice of a person of great capacity. What is the use of training in the paths which are shared with the persons of small and medium capacities? Reply, the training in the paths that are shared with these two is prerequisite for the development of the paths of a person of great capacity. I will explain how this is so, why one guides students through such stages, explained in terms of the actual reason and the purpose. The actual reason, the entrance of the to the Mahayana is solely spirit of supreme enlightenment. So if you actually have the experience of bodhicitta, then you will purify much of your negative karmas. So we create karma, negative karmas, in relation to the three objects of refuge, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and so forth, and then also in relation to the animals in samsara. And so we can purify this negative karmas by cultivating bodhicitta. It has a very powerful means to purify them. So our actions of killing, non-virtuous actions, the 10 non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind are created in relation to others. So, in relation to those who when we create negative actions in relation to them, and we if we actually think of develop compassion towards them, then it would be really powerful to overcome or avoid negative actions. So if you actually see the disadvantage or the shortcoming of the obscuration to knowledge, then of course you will have the naturally have the wish or the aspiration to overcome the delusions which leave these imprints of the cognitive obscuration within our mind. So if you say, if I kill somebody, I will be creating negative action. It is just rather thinking about yourself alone. But when you say, if I harm others, if I kill somebody, it actually harms the other person, then you are actually orienting your mind towards compassion, towards that. And so therefore, bodhicitta has great potential to purify negativities. Therefore, first you must train in the, it says, thought that is common to persons of small and medium capacities in order to develop a wish to attain the two benefits, high status and the good certain goodness. After you have developed such a wish, you again engage in cultivating the spirit of enlightenment, the attitude that produces these benefits. As you do this, you must develop the great compassion and love that are foundation to this attitude. In other words, when you contemplate how you wander through cyclic existence bereft of happiness and tormented by suffering, your body hairs should stand on end. Without this experience, it would be impossible for you to become unable to tolerate other beings' torment while they suffer and are bereft of happiness as they wander through cyclic existence. Engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds, says, these beings have yet to dream of such an attitude toward even their own welfare. How then could they produce it for others' welfare? So therefore, the training and the thought of common to persons of small capacity are methods for producing an uncontrived spirit. And it is not separate from the path along with your teacher leads to. Accordingly, you work at many ways to purify yourself in non-virtue and accumulating virtue in using the practices of developing both attitude that is shared with persons of small capacity and attitude that is shared with persons of medium capacity. These are the practices such as going for refuge, thinking about karma and its effects. Understand that these two help you to develop the spirit of enlightenment because they correspond to either the seven branches of worship or the practice of refuge, which are methods of training that are prerequisite for the spirit of enlightenment in the context of the practices for the persons of great capacity. At this point, the Guru thoroughly expounds the ways in which the trainings of persons of small and medium capacities serve as components for the development of the spirit of unsurpassed enlightenment. Moreover, you, the student, reach certain knowledge of this. Then, whenever you sustain a meditation, it is extremely important for you to keep this understanding in mind and train in these teachings as components for your development of the spirit of enlightenment. Otherwise, the path of the persons of great capacity and the paths of the persons of small and medium capacities would be separate and unrelated. And since you do not attain any certain knowledge of the spirit of enlightenment until you reach the actual path of the person of great capacity, your lack of training in these topics as components of your development of the spirit of enlightenment would either prevent you from developing that spirit, or while you lack this training, cause you to deviate from your great purpose of developing that spirit. Therefore, pay close attention to this spirit. In this way, train in the path of persons with small and medium capacities, and train well in this, in what is explained in the context of the person with great capacity. Then, to the best of your ability, develop an uncontrived spirit of enlightenment or in your mind stream. Next, in order to stabilize this spirit, make a special practice of refuge, and then perform the rite of the aspirational spirit of enlightenment. After you have adopted this spirit, aspirational spirit, through the rite, you learn the bodhisattva deeds, such as the six perfections and the four ways of gathering disciples. Once this yearning arises from the depths of your heart, decisively take up the pure vow of the engaged spirit of enlightenment. Then, at the risk of your life, avoid being polluted by the root infractions. Strive not to be soiled by even small and medium contaminations or by the creation of faults. Even if you are soiled, thoroughly purify yourself by repairing the infractions, just as is taught in the scripture. Next, train broadly in the six perfections. In particular, train well in meditative stabilization, the heart of meditative serenity, in order to make your mind capable of being set on the virtuous object of meditation according to your wish. So we have the practice of Guru Yoga, where we visualize the Guru and the merit field, and men make offerings to them. In order to make your mind capable of being set on a virtuous object of meditation according to your wish, the elders learn for the path says that you should develop meditative serenity for the sake of producing the super knowledges. He is simply giving an example. In other contexts, he says that you should develop serenity for the sake of producing insight. Therefore, achieve serenity mainly for the purpose of insight. Then, in order to cut the bonds of the conception of two selves, make a philosophical determination of the meaning of emptiness, which is selflessness. After sustaining an unmistaken method of meditation, achieve insight, the heart of wisdom. Accordingly, Adisha's commentary on the difficult points of Lamb for the Path states that except for the practices of serenity and insight, all the practices up to the, and including the training in the precepts of the vows of the engaged spirit of enlightenment, constitute the training in ethical discipline. Serenity is the training in the concentration of our mind. Insight is the training of wisdom. Furthermore, all the practices up to and including meditative serenity constitute the factor of enlightenment called either method, the collection of merit, the paths that depend on conventional truth, or the stages of the vast path. The development of the three kinds of special wisdom constitutes the factor of enlightenment called wisdom, the collection of wisdom, that which depends on ultimate truth. Or the stages of the profound path. Therefore, be very certain about their order, the fact that they are the comprehensive list, and the fact that they do not achieve enlightenment by either method or wisdom alone. This is how the royal geese, the conqueror's children, who are on their way to the great ocean of the Buddha's qualities, spread their two wings and fly. One wing is conventional truth, all the factors of method, the vast. The other wing, which depends on ultimate truth, is knowing well both reality and selflessness. However, they do not take up only a single part of the path or fly like a bird with a broken wing. As Chandrakirti's commentary on the middle way says, spreading the broad white wings of reality and conventionality, the royal geese, escorted by the flock of living beings, fly on the wings of virtue to supremacy on the far shore of a Buddha's ocean-like qualities. So, as part of the means of attaining high rebirth bliss, the Lama Tsongkhapa goes through the practice of taking refuge and teachings on the law of causality. The training includes instructions on either the yogas with signs that. So So after you have trained your mind by means of the ordinary path, you must certainly enter the mantra path, because when you do, you will quickly complete the two collections. If you cannot practice more than just the ordinary path, or do not want to do it because your inclination inherited from former lives is too weak, then just improve on these very stages of the path. It is taught in all the vehicles in general and in the mantra vehicle in particular that reliance on the teacher is very crucial. So consequently, once you enter the mantra path, you should follow the mantra explanations, the practice of the method of relying on the teacher that is even more specialized than what I have explained before. Then ripen your mind with initiations that come from pure tantric sources and observe properly at the risk of your life all of the vows and pledges that you have received during your initiations. You can take the vow and pledge again if you are affected by a root infection, but your mind will not be spoiled. But your mind will have been spoiled, and it will be very difficult to give rise to good qualities. Therefore, specifically, strive never to be tainted by the root infractions. And so, move on to middle length. How to take advantage of this life? How? How to take the essence. So as everything the Buddha did, in the beginning, the generation of the mind of enlightenment, in the middle, the accumulation of the collections, and at the end, the manifestation of complete Buddhahood was done for the welfare of sentient beings only. All this Dharma teaching also only accomplished the welfare of sentient beings. That being so, the goal to be accomplished, the welfare of sentient beings, is twofold: temporary higher status and ultimately certain goodness. As for the undertaking of it, undertaking to attain the former, everything that has been set forth is included in the actual cycle of teachings for lesser beings, or in the cycle of teachings common to the lesser beings. Special lesser beings do not mostly act for the sake of this life, pursuing instead the excellence of high status in future lives and engaging in achieving causes for that. And then the definition of the beings of small scope, according to Adisha's lamp for the path of enlightenment. And then there are two kinds of certain goodness: liberation, that is merely release from samsara, and omniscience. It is in this regard everything that has been set forth, starting from the vehicles of hearers and solitary realizers, including in the actual cycle of teachings for the intermediate beings, or in the cycle of teachings common to the intermediate beings. Intermediate beings develop in disenchantment with existence as a whole, and having made the liberation, that is the release from existence of the earth. So there are two means of attaining omniscience. So within the beings of lesser capacity, there are those who are more preoccupied with the pleasures of this life only, without actually seeking to the higher rebirth. But if you are able to tame your mind, discipline your mind well, then of course you will create causes for a better rebirth in the next life. So avoiding harming others and helping others. Although you may think of attaining higher rebirth, but because of your action, harming others, you'll be creating, causes for higher rebirth as such. So those who tell lie, according to one article written by a scientist, American scientist, says that those who lie all the time have a greater level of stress because they are not transparent. And so if you are transparent and don't lie, so then you will be transparent. So we're not. He's not talking about next life or talking about creating negative karma as such, but what actually happens to the person when they lie. And so, to attain higher rebirths, in Buddhism, the teaching on the law of causality is given. So, the teaching on causality, law of causality, comes as part of the means to lead to a higher rebirth and a happy state of higher rebirth. So in this teaching, the ethical morality comes. Whether you are a believer or not, the 7 billion people on this earth want happiness and not suffering, and which is rooted in our mind. So being compassionate and warm-hearted, and you will have good state of mind, you will have peace of mind, and then physically you'll be happier. And when you are happy, then even if you are amongst in the midst of misfortune, you will have calm mind. Whereas if you always think of harming others with covetousness and malicious thought, then you will not actually be happy. And so that in turn harms your health. So money alone cannot bring you happiness, because it creates, with money you have greed, and then that in turn gives rise to jealousy and competitive feeling, and then frustration, anger, and so forth. So money alone will not help to bring about happiness, because you actually make enemies with others through these. So in order to have good happiness in the next life, we should practice the Dharma. And sometimes people say that, oh, I don't care about the happiness in this life, but actually I want happiness in the future, and they actually torture themselves too much, but that's not good. And you should, of course, engage in Dharma practice and to help yourself in this life as well as in the future. So So engaging in bodhisattva deeds, and it says, in beings for whom up to now such thoughts of even their for even their own sake have not occurred, not even in their dream, how could it arise for others? So it's talking about bodhicitta. For that reason, one should have thought about how, in the context of lesser beings, the harm of suffering, the harm of the suffering of lower beings befalls you, and how, in the context of intermediate beings, even in the rebirths of higher status, there is suffering and no peace or happiness. Meditation, in accord with your own experience on sentient beings who have become dear to you, becomes the cause for love and compassion to arise. Since the mind of enlightenment is born from love and compassion, training in the thoughts shared with lesser and intermediate beings is the means of generating the uncontrived mind of enlightenment. Efforts to purify and accumulate by many means through contemplating the taking of refuge, actions and their effects, and so forth, in the context of the two paths, also constitute methods for training the mental continuum. That is, they are preliminary practices for the generation of the mind of enlightenment. Since they are part of the seven-limbed practice, along with taking refuge, they should also be understood as methods for generating the mind of enlightenment. Here, the spiritual master indicates how the teaching cycles of lesser and intermediate beings become branches for the rising of their mind of enlightenment, and these disciples also gain certainty in this regard. Through recalling these points with each practice, you should thoroughly cherish this training. If you fail to do this, the path of great beings and the individual's paths will become disconnected. As you will not gain certainty in regard to the mind of enlightenment until you reach the actual path of great beings, this would become an obstacle to the arising of that mind, or meanwhile the deterioration of that great objective. Therefore, you should persevere in this. And this has two points. And having trained in the manner, you should make the uncontrived mind of enlightenment. And contrived mind of enlightenment arise in your continuum as much as possible. Then, in order to make it stable, first there is an uncommon way of taking refuge, and then the performing of ritual of the aspiring mind of enlightenment. Having taken the aspiring of enlightenment by means of the ritual, practice its trainings. Then, time and again, develop the will to train in the conduct, the six perfections, the four ways of gathering disciples, and so forth. Once the wish to train in it has become come forth from the bottom of your heart, take the pure vow of engaging mind of enlightenment. As for the engagement of the mantra, since proper reliance on spiritual teachers is generally given great emphasis in all the vehicles, and particularly in mantra, you should make it even more preeminent in this context than before. Then, having ripened your continuum by means of an empowerment that comes from pure tantra, you should risk your life for that is God, the commitments and vows you obtained at that time, especially since if a rude downfall occurs, even though you take the vows again, it'll spoil your mind and it'll be difficult for positive qualities to develop. Do not be tainted by one. You should not become tainted even by a secondary downfall, and if you do, you should not be unconcerned about it, but should purify it through confession and restraint. Then you should be guided as appropriate in the yoga with science in accordance with the lower tantra classes, or in the yoga of the generation stage in accordance with the highest higher tantra classes. On that basis, you should train as appropriate in the yoga without science in accordance with the lower tantra classes, or yoga of the completion stage according to the higher tantra classes. Such is the structure of the presentation of the path set forth in the lamp for the path to enlightenment, and the stages of the path also guides students in the same way. The purpose, this has two points, the actual purpose, the sources. The actual purpose has two points. Question, sir. And question, if the teaching cycles of lesser and intermediate beings are the preparatory practice of great beings, it should indeed be all right to consider them the stages of the path to great beings. So what is the use of the phrase, the stages of the path, in common to lesser and intermediate beings? There are two great purposes. Answer, there are two great purposes of classifying and guiding the three types of beings. One, in this way, the conceit of claiming oneself to be a great being, while the mental attitude common to lesser and intermediate beings have not even risen, is overcome. And number two, all three, the highest, intermediate, and the least mental attitudes, have great benefits. The way in which these two purposes are great is that since so Lamrimchemo, the actual way to take advantage of a life of leisure and opportunity. The actual way to take full advantage of the life of leisure and opportunity is presented in three sections. Page 144, training the mind in the stages of health shared with persons of small capacity, training the mind in the stages of health shared with persons of medium capacity, and the training the mind in stages of health for persons of great capacity. So the faults of not cultivating mindfulness of death, as previously mentioned, there are four errors that impede you taking full advantage of your life, conceiving the impure to be pure, suffering to be happiness, the impermanent to be permanent, and the selfless to have a self. Initially, it is merely the conception of the impermanent to be conception impermanent to be permanent that is the avenue of much injury. This conception is twofold, coarse and subtle. Of these two, in the case of your coarse impermanence, which is your death, the avenue of injury is the very thought, I will not die. Everyone has the idea that death will come later. And at the end, however, with each passing day, people think, I will not die today, I will not die today. Clinging to this thought until the moment of death, if you are obstructed by such an attitude and do not bring it remedy to mind, you will continue to think that you will remain in this life. So one is not actually mind being full of dharma, and the second is not being mindful purely of sincerely of dharma. And so our purpose and goal is to reach enlightenment, Buddhahood. And as a means to that, we have to engage in helping others, serving others. But what we actually do is, as said by Gongdang Tenpe Derme, the mantrayana, the practice of tantra, is actually taken to be like doing some rituals to over control others, gain control over others, and overcome some kind of a sickness and obstacles and so forth. But without having this spirit of enlightenment, bodhicitta, even the practices that are meant for omniscience are actually used for trivial goals to achieve goals and of this life alone. So then, as long as you have this attitude, you will continue to think only of how to achieve happiness and evade suffering in this life alone, thinking I need this and that. You will not engage in religious practice because you do not think about things of great importance, such as future life, liberation, and omniscience. Although you may be, you may perchance engage in steady reflection, meditation, and so forth, it will not only for it will be only for the sake of this life, and whatever virtue you create will be of a mere meager strength. Moreover, since your practice will be involved with wrongdoing, sins, and infractions, it would be rare for these virtuous activities not to be mixed with causes of miserable rebirths. Even if you try to engage in practices directed towards future lives, you will not be able to prevent the laziness of procrastination, thinking, I will do it eventually. By passing time in distraction, such as sleep, lethargy, senseless talk, and eating and drinking, you will not attain proper achievement, which comes through great effort. And so because of this clinging to the permanence of life, so what process could be worse than that? It says in the 400 stanzas, what could be more dangerous than to sleep as though at ease while subject to the Lord of Death, ruler of the three worlds, himself without a master? So whereas things are filthy, we see them as attractive, and then because of that, and also because of the attachment to the permanence of things, we also hold on to things having some permanence, and also have these other distorted views of seeing selfhood in where there is no self. So if you think about the certainty and inevitability of death, the time, uncertain time of death, and that Dharma is the only way to help yourself at the time of death, you will be actually engaging in the Dharma practices very sincerely and earnestly. Without that, you will not. Engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds, also says, I will have to depart, leaving everything. But not knowing this, I committed various sins for the sake of friends and foes. So next is the benefit of cultivating mindfulness of death. So when those who have a little understanding of the teaching conclude that they will die today or tomorrow, they see that friends and material possessions will not accompany them, and so they stop craving them. Naturally, they then wish to take full advantage of human birth through virtuous deeds such as giving gifts. So you're thinking about the great importance of meaningfulness of this life, and also how potential it is to accomplish our goals. Naturally, they would have giving gifts. Just so, if you create an authentic mindfulness of death, you will see that all toiling for worldly things, such as goods, respect, and fame, is as fruitless as winnowing chaff, and is a source of deception. Then you will turn away from wrongdoing. With constant and respectful effort, you will accumulate good karma by doing such virtuous deeds as going for refuge and maintaining ethical discipline. You will thereby bring lasting significance to things like the body that would not have had such significance. You will ascend to a sublime state and will lead others there as well. What could be more meaningful? For this reason, the scriptures use many examples to praise the mindfulness of death. The quotations from the great final Nirvana Sutra, and it says, among all reapings, the autumn harvest is supreme. Among all tracks, the track of elephants is supreme. Among all ideas, the idea of impermanence and death is supreme, because with it you eliminate all the attachment, ignorance, and pride of the three realms. Similarly, it is praised for being the hammer that instantly destroys all afflictions and wrongdoing, for being the gateway into the instantaneous achievement of all virtue and goodness, and so on. The collection of the indicative verses says, understanding that the body is like a clay vessel, so the kind of mindfulness of death you should develop. For those who have not practiced the path at all, the fear of death manifests itself as the worry that they will separate from the relatives and so forth. This even happens to animals, of course. And this fear is caused by the strong attachment. Therefore, do not develop this here. What then should you develop? Certainly, nothing of your body which you have appropriated through karma and afflictions shall survive death. This may frighten you, yet for the time being you cannot stop it. However, you should fear death as if you have not secured your welfare in future lives by putting an end to the causes of the miserable realms and establishing the causes of high status and certain goodness. If you consider your fear about this, it is within your power not to be frightened at the moment of the death, because there are things you can do to secure your future welfare. If you do not act on these things, you will be tormented by regret at the time of death. In general, fearing that you will not be liberated from cyclic existence, and in particular fearing that you will fall into the miserable realms. And next is how to cultivate mindfulness of death. Cultivate cultivate this by way of the three roots, nine reasons and three decisions. The three roots are death is certain, that the time of death is uncertain, and that at the time of death nothing helps except religious practice. So the contemplation of death is certain. That death is certain. Meditation on the certainty of death has three aspects. The Lord of death will definitely come and therefore cannot be avoided. Our lifetime cannot be extended and constantly diminishes. And while you are alive, there is little time for religious practice. And the contemplation that the Lord of death will definitely come and therefore cannot be avoided, no matter what kind of body you assume at birth, death comes. The collection of indicative verses says, if all the Buddhas and the particular Buddha Shravaka's disciples left their bodies, what can be said about ordinary beings? No matter where you stay, death comes. The same text says, some where to live that is unharmed by death, such a place does not exist. It does not exist in space, nor in the sea, nor if you stay in the midst of mountains. Death's destruction of living beings is no different at any point in the past or future. The same text says, the wise know that all who have come and will come perish, leave this body and go to the next life. Therefore, be sure to engage in pure behavior by abiding in the teaching. You do not escape by fleeing from death, nor can you turn death away by such things as mantras. The advice to the King Sutra says, for example, it says Kamapa. There is a quotation from this sutra, and the next it says Kamapa was a Kadamba master. So we have to think about the impermanence of death, about death, over and over again. These days, when people have some cancer, they even avoid mentioning the name cancer, and so death is something they don't want to talk about. So death will come inevitably. So for someone who actually tries to cannot bear even the name death, when death comes, it will give lots of problem. But instead, if you think about death, inevitability of death, and these reasons that are given here, you should think that it's something natural that will come to you because of having taken birth. So you'll feel that it's quite logical that you will die because you have taken birth. And then you also should think of the uncertain time of death. And then when death comes, you should try to use your understanding and your meditation on meditation of taking the three states of birth, death, intermediate state, and rebirth into the path with which you have familiarized your mind with while you're alive. And so when death comes, you should not feel anxious. And the best is to actually take this state of death into the path. But even if you may not be able to do that, you should still feel when death comes that it is something that you are very familiar. A friendly friend has come. Something like that kind of attitude should develop in you. So Kamavas says, now we should be frightened by death. At the time of death, we should be fearless. But we are the opposite. We are not afraid now. And at the moment of death, we dig our fingernails into our chest. So the next contemplation that our lifetime cannot be extended and constantly diminish, the descent into the Womb Sutra. Entering the Womb Sutra says, currently, if we protect our bodies well in order to live comfortably, we will live at longest 100 years or a little more. Thus, the maximum is no more than this. Even though it may be possible to live long, the time until death passes very quickly. A year is consumed with the passage of months, months with the passage of days, days with the passage of day and night, also with such periods of time as morning, etc. Thus, few of us reach the expected lifespan of 100. So there is no addition. We cannot add number of years to our lifespan, but there is constant factors. There are constant factors which actually diminish our lifespan. So some animals like tortoise live few hundreds of years because of their body composition, but for us humans, we know that we cannot live very long over 100 years. So since we came into exile, we Tibetans came into exile, it's 50 plus years have passed by. And those who came into exile as refugees in the beginning in India, now they have their children and grandchildren. So past seems to have gone, but then the future seems very long, far away from us. But that's not the case. So as said here, years pass by. Are consumed by passage of months, and months by days, days by night, day, night, and so forth. So what is the use of actually worrying about death? Because it will come. There was one monk, Gyantembum, when he was sick, he actually told me that he told his doctors to tell him whether he has cancer, because I have no, I won't feel sad or worry about this. And so if death should befall him, he thought that he would be able to use the time that he has, if he knew what sickness he has, to practice the Dharma. And so unless you think of this, you will deceive yourself further and further. So contemplate this with many examples. When weaving cloth, weavers use no more than one piece of thread on each pass, yet they quickly finish weaving the cloth. When animals such as sheep are led to slaughter, they move closer to death with every step they take. The water carried by the current of a strong river or water in the waterfall or on a steep mountain quickly disappears. Just as in these examples, your life is quickly spent and gone. Just as when herdsmen pick up their sticks, their livestock helplessly follow them home, so sickness and aging leads you helplessly into the presence of the Lord of Death. In this way, meditate on the certainty of death from many perspectives. And then there's quotation from the collection of indicative verses. For example, just as when weaving a cloth, you reach the end by weaving individual courses, so too is human life. For example, just as those who are to be killed come closer to the killing place with every step they take, so too is human life. And then Lalita extensive sport sutra says, also speaks of impermanence with many examples. The three worlds are impermanent like an autumn cloud. The birth and death of beings is like watching a dance. The passage of life is like lightning in the sky. It moves quickly like a waterfall. Thus, one's inward reflection yields some sense of certainty about impermanence. Contemplate it by applying your understanding of it to many things. For it is said that everything around us teaches impermanence. So it's a matter of how you actually perceive things, your own reaction and your outlook on things. So all these things that are impermanent, they actually show how things are illusory, how things are impermanent, deceptive, and so forth. Otherwise, if you are not able to take these as lessons for your spiritual practice, then they will actually provoke disturbed state of mind. So after you have reflected again and again, you reach certain knowledge. It is not helpful to do just a little reflection and then say nothing happened. As Kamava said, you say that nothing happened when you thought about it, but when did you reflect? If it was during the day, you were constantly distracted, and at night you slept. Do not lie. At the end of this life, the Lord of Death will destroy you, and you will pass into the next world. Until then, there will never be time when your lifespan does not diminish, whether you are going somewhere, walking around, or lying down. Thus, starting from the moment that you enter the womb, you do not remain even for an instant, but go headlong towards next lifetime. Therefore, even your intervening life is exclusively consumed in a procession toward death, led by the messenger's sickness and aging. Consequently, do not rejoice in the thought that while you are living, you are stationary and not moving toward next lifetime. For example, when falling from the top of a high cliff, the time of falling to earth through space is not enjoyable, as cited in Chandrakirti in his commentary on the 400 stanzas. Hero of humans, beginning from the first night of entering a womb in this world, one proceeds daily without delay into the presence of the Lord of Death. And in the story for stopping the four errors, it says, this verse, these passages indicate that it is certain that your death will come quickly. And the contemplation of the certainty of death such that even while you are alive, there is little time for religious practice. Next point. Even when you could, so please read on. There's a quotation from the entrance into the womb sutra. In the story for stopping the four errors says, in this time of 100-year lifespan, even the longest of human lives is finished in only 100 years. Of that, the beginning and end are made useless by youth and old age. Things like sleep, sickness, and sickness destroy all hope for practice, leaving no time for it. How much remains to the lifespan of a being born among humans who live in happiness? Furthermore, Chegawa said that if you subtract from 60 years the time you lose to food and clothing, sleep, sickness, not more than 5 years are left to devote to the teachings. This being the case, the wonders of this life will be mere memories at the time of death, like waking up and remembering the pleasurable experiences in a single dream. Think, if the enemy, death, is surely approaching and cannot be stopped, why should I delight in the delusions of this life? Then decide that you must practice the teaching and make many heartfelt pledges to do so. And the garland of birth stories, the Jataka Mala says, alas, afflicted and worldly persons, I do not like the unstable things and so forth. And then next is, so you should reflect in this way. And next is contemplation that time of death is uncertain. It is certain that death will come some time between today and 100 years from now. It is uncertain on which day within that period death will come. Therefore, for instance, you cannot determine whether or not you will die today. However, you must assume that you will die and should think, I will die today. For if you assume that you will not die and think, I will not die today, or I probably will not die today, you will continually make preparations to stay in this life and will not prepare for your life, next life. Meanwhile, you will be seized by the Lord of Death. You will then die in sorrow. If you prepare for death every day, you will accomplish many goals for your next life. Hence, even if you do not die today, you will have done well. If you do die, it is even more meaningful than in that you will have done what you need to do. For example, when it is certain that a great enemy is coming to do you severe harm sometime between now and some point in the future, but you do not know on which day the enemy will come. You must be cautious every day. It is like that. If you think every day I will die, or at least I will probably die today, you will act for the benefit of whatever life next life you will go to, and you will not make preparations to remain in this life. If you do not have this thought, you will see yourself as staying in this life, and you will make provisions for this life rather than act for the benefit of your next life. For example, when you plan to stay someplace for a long time, you make preparations for going elsewhere. Preparations to stay there. If you think that you are not going to stay there, but you are going elsewhere, you make preparations for leaving. Hence, every day you must develop an awareness of the imminence of your death in the following way. The contemplation that lifespan is in this world of Jambudvipa is uncertain. And then the contemplation that the causes of death are very many and the causes of life few. And also the contemplation that the time of death is uncertain because the body is very fragile. And contemplation that at the time of death nothing helps except religious practice. So in general, lifespan on the Uttarakuru continent is definite. Even though on the other continents besides Uttarakuru and Jambudvipa, there is no certainty as to whether our body is made up of four elements which are actually which oppose each other, a conflict with each other. There is no certainty that as to whether one will be able to contemplate one's own lifespan. For the most part, there is a definite lifespan. The lifespan on Jambudvipa is very indefinite, ranging from the initial lifespan that is vast beyond measure to an eventual maximum length of 10 years of age. Further, you can see that there is no certainty as to whether death will occur in youth, or in old age, or in between. In the same vein, the treasury of knowledge says, here the lifespan is uncertain. At the end of the cycle, it is 10 years. In the beginning, measureless. So bear in mind the cases you have seen or heard concerning the gurus and friends who reached the end of their lifespan but died without fulfilling their intentions, suddenly dying because of external and internal causes. Be aware of death, thinking over and over, I too am subject to such a death. Then the contemplation that the causes of death are very many and the causes of life few. So the contemplation of the that the there's this the contemplation of uncertainty of death is the most important of the three roots. This is the very thing that will direct, redirect your mind, so work hard at it. Page 158. Next is the contemplation that at the time of death, nothing helps except religious practice. Friends will not help, resources will not help, your body will not help. But consequently think, it'll certainly come to pass that all the wonders of this world will leave me behind. I will leave them behind as well and go to some other world. In fact, this will happen today. Contemplate how, at the time of death, only religious practice will serve as a refuge, a protection, a defense. The letter to Kanishka says, when the past karma had caused this life is spent and you are connected with new karma and led by the lot of death, everyone turns back. Except for your virtue and sin, nothing will follow you. Know this and act well. So in general, death is inevitable. So everyone knows this. And death is uncertain. The time of death is uncertain. But except Dharma practice, nothing can help at the time of death. So if you, when you think about the continuity of the mind, so of course, if there is some opposition, opposing force, which actually seizes the continuity of the mind, puts an end to the continuity of mind, then of course it will not continue. If there is a very powerful opposing factor which actually can do that, then the mind will not continue. It's like actually making a seed of a grain, making it impotent by inefficient caches by burning it. But because mind continues, so at the time of death, it will continue, and therefore, when we have distorted state of mind, there's always an antidote that that counters it. So, but the mere luminous cognitive nature of the mind has nothing that that can oppose it and put an end to it. So, of course, the gross, the coarse level of mind, like the sensory perceptions, will cease. But the subtle mind, for example, in the case of people who are clinically dead, for example, the previous Gaudenti Rinpoche, we actually had an did some check on his body when he had when he was clinically dead, but and through the experiment, scientist actually checked it, and he actually told me that there was something that had happened during the time when he was in Tukdam, and then there's also one incident that happened in New Zealand with one lama who died in a hospital. And so, even after brain death, there is some phenomena that is not explained by science yet. But in Tantra, there is nothing else but we can actually, this can be explained except through what is said in Tantra. So when it comes to the subtle clear light or luminous cognitive mind, then we actually have to think about that subtle mind that continues. And then we have people who remember their past lives. And past and future lives cannot be explained except on the basis of consciousness, continuity of consciousness. So if there is no past and future lives, then we would have to actually explain everything. Perhaps, finally, ultimately, we would have to say things come by chance and not and they come without causes and conditions. So this is quite complicated. And so on the basis of the continuity of the mind, we can say there's no beginning of sentient beings. There's no beginning to the mind. And sentient beings. So this body we have now, which is related to this life, and our relatives, our possessions are related to this life. And so these things that are related to this body, all these resources that we have, the excellent resources, cannot be of help to us at the time of death. What can actually help us at the time of death is influence us is are the bad and the good karmas that follow us. So at the time of death, when we are actually going through the process of dying, our positive states of mind can actually be triggered. And then the relief imprints on this mind, the innate luminous mind. And so this can help us, the positive energy or positive imprint that we leave on our minds while we are alive can help us when, if we are able to reinforce that at the time of death. So we have to make a difference between us humans and animals. So it said, if instead you seek only to find happiness to and avoid suffering up until your death, then you are going to need to a course of conduct which surpasses animals' behaviors, since animals are better than humans at temporary happiness. Otherwise, even though you have obtained a life in a happy realm, it will be just as though you had not. And Podova says, for me, appearance and exclusion refers to my own meditation on impermanence. With it, I exclude all the appearances of this life, such as intimates, relatives, and possessions. Then, knowing that I must always go to the next life alone, without anything else, I think that I will do nothing except religious practice. Thereupon, a lack of attachment for this life begins. Until this arises in your mind, the paths of all teachings remain blocked. And Durbhava said, along the way, accumulate the collections of and purify obscurations. Make supplications to the deity and the gurus, contemplate earnestly and with perseverance. If you do this, though you may think that knowledge will not arise in even 100 years, it will arise anyway because nothing composite remains as it is. And so this concludes the means to achieve higher rebirth and happiness in the next life. The stage of the path common to lesser beings. The training in the mind in the stage, training the mind in the stage of the path common to lesser beings has three parts. The actual training in the attitude of lesser beings, within which there is a developing mental attitude of interest in future worlds, and death of impermanence, explanation of how to be mindful of death, that one will not stay in this world for long, being mindful of death, contemplating that one will not stay in this world for long. This has four parts: the disadvantage of not cultivating mindfulness of death, the advantage of cultivating the mindfulness of death, what kind of mind that is, mindful of death is generated. How to cultivate the mindfulness of death. The disadvantage of not cultivating the mindfulness of death. And has 5 points, demonstrating that the mind's bias towards the idea that one is not going to die is the gateway to harm, and how this prevents us from even taking an interest in future lives, and how this results in meaningful endeavors, also having little power, and how this results in long-term goals also being postponed, how holding the permanence induces attachment, aversion, and so forth, and how they induce faulty behavior. The disadvantage of cultivating mindfulness of death, the advantages of cultivating of death, mindfulness of death, the great value of being mindful of death. Once a genuine awareness of mindful of death has developed, for instance, if you are convinced you will die tomorrow and have just little understanding of the Dharma, you will see that henceforth you will be without the company of relatives and friends, and you will stop craving for them. In the majority of people, the wish to take the essence of this life by means of giving things away and the like will naturally arise. In that way, seeing life, seeing that all efforts for the sake of the worldly goals, such as fame and gain, are futile, you will turn away from faulty behavior, accumulate the good karma of taking refuge, ethics, and the like. What could be more meaningful than ascending to sublime states oneself by those means and guiding the migrant beings there too. That is why being mindful of death is also praised with many analogies in the great final Nirvana Sutra. It says, the same quotation as in Lam Chamo. Similarly, the mindfulness of death is praised, among other things, as hammer that instantly destroys all mental afflictions and all faulty behaviors, and as a gateway to the simultaneous accomplishment of all that is virtuous and excellent. Mindfulness of death is the door to all excellence. In brief, the time for achieving the goal of beings is only this time that we have gained the special basis. We mostly remain in the lower realms, and even if we make it to the happy realms just once, they are predominantly places of unfreedom, so that we do not find an opportunity to accomplish the Dharma. If we gain a basis suited to accomplish the Dharma and still do not accomplish it properly, it is due to the thought, I'm not going to die today, yet. Therefore, the mind that holds to the position of not dying is the door of all manner of degeneration, whereas mindfulness of death is a door to all excellence. And therefore, you should not think this is the practice for those who do not have other profound Dharma to meditate on. And although it is something to meditate on, it should be meditated on a bit in the beginning, but it is not able to be practiced continuously. Rather, you should meditate on it until you gain certainty from the bottom of your heart that it is necessary in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. What kind of mind that is mindful of death is generated? The fear born from worries by separation from relatives and the like is the kind of fear of death of those who are not trained in the path. So here, this is not what is to be generated. Well then, what kind of fear is to be generated? All bodies taken under the power of karma. Power of karma and mental afflictions do not pass beyond death. Which is why, even though this may give rise to fear, death cannot be prevented for the time being. However, without putting a stop to the causes of the lower realms and without accomplishing the causes of higher status and certain goodness, you will fear death. In this regard, if you think about the resulting fear, these two can be accomplished, whereby you will not be afraid when on the verge of dying. If you do not achieve that objective, for fear of not being liberated from the cyclic existence in general and the falling into the lower realms in particular, you will be tormented by remorse at the time of death. How to cultivate mindfulness of death? You should meditate on it this way. You should meditate on this by way of the three roots the three root thoughts, the nine reasons, and the three decisions. So the three roots, the sense that death is uncertain. The Lord of Death will certainly come, and there is no conditions for warding it off. And that your lifespan cannot be increased and diminishes incessantly. And you die without having had time to practice the Dharma while alive. And the second root is that it is uncertain, that this life is uncertain. It is uncertain when we will die. And then the contemplation that there is no certainty with regard to the lifespan of Jivan Dvipa, which is why the time of death is uncertain, and the contemplation that there are many conditions that lead to death and few conditions that promote life, and that the contemplation that the body is extremely vulnerable and the time of death is therefore uncertain. So after thoughts like these, you should reiterate many times the innermost decision to practice the Dharma from this very moment, for it is uncertain when your body and life will be overcome by the Lord of Death, and you should not assume that there is still life, time. As Sri Jagat Mitra said, Earth Lord, as long as this borrowed body abides in pleasure, not ill, not decayed, not in that time, a frame, take its essence, fearless of illness, death, and decay. In times of illness, old age, and decay, you may be concerned, but what is the use? Among the three root thoughts, the thought about the uncertainty of the time of death is the most important one, which is why you should put effort into it. And at the time of death, nothing except the Dharma will be of benefit. This has two parts, the actual reason and the decision. The actual reason has three points. Thus, when you see that you have to go to another world, even if at the time you are surrounded by loving and very distressed friends or relatives, you cannot take even one of them along. Whatever heaps of attractive riches you have obtained, you cannot take along even a small particle of them. If you have to give up even the flesh and bones you were born with, what need is there to talk about anything else? And the decision to practice nothing but the Dharma has three points. The actual decision, then think, at that time it will be certain. Certainly, it will certainly come to pass that all the excellences of this life leave me, just as I leave them. And I will proceed to another world. This will happen today. You should take the decision many times to practice the Dharma without submitting to conditions of the body, friends, possessions, and so forth. The need to try hard, since it is the foundation of the path. Although this arises only with difficulty, you should try hard, since it is the foundation of the path. In the words of Padova, by elimination of appearances consists in this. My elimination of appearances consists in this very meditation on impermanence, eliminating all the phenomena of this life, close relationships, possessions, and the like, and aware that I will go here and there to another life alone without anything. I think there is nothing to do other than the practice of Dharma, and non-attachment to this life first arises. As long as this attitude has not arisen in my mind, I will sit with the path to all the Dharma blocked. Then there is what Prabhupada was saying, where he says, incidentally, if you accumulate the collections and purify obscurations, make requests to thy deities and your gurus, and contemplate insistently with perseverance, even that which you think will not come about for 100 years will come about effortlessly, for compounded phenomena do not remain static as they are. When someone asked Kamava about moving on to another object of meditation, he said, repeat the previous one. When asked about the remaining one, he said, there is nothing beyond it. So we finish with this part. In this way, you will also understand it in other contexts. Diko, lamrim, menam, dev, namdren geve uang borota. By accumulating through great long efforts, the two collections of wisdom and merit as vast as the sky, may I become the chief of the conquerors to guide all sentient beings whose feeble minds are blinded by ignorance. Also, in all lives, until I reach that point, may Manjukosha kindly look after me after I find the supreme path, completing the stages of the teaching. By accomplishing it, may I please the conquerors or Buddhas. By skill and means inspired by strong loving kindness, may the vital points of the path that I precisely know clear away the mental darkness of beings. May I then uphold the conquerors' teachings for a long time in regions where the supreme precious teaching has not spread, or where it has spread but has then declined. May I illuminate that treasure of happiness and benefits with a mind deeply moved by great compassion. May this treatise on the stages of the path of enlightenment, well founded on the wondrous deeds of the conquerors and their children, bring glory to the minds of those who want to be free and long preserve the conquerors' achievements. As for all who provide conditions that support integration of the good path and clear away the conditions that inhibit that integration, whether they are humans or not, may they never be separated in all their lifetimes from the pure or authentic path praised by the conquerors. When I strive to properly achieve the supreme vehicle through the 10 deeds of the teaching, may I become accompanied always by those who have power, and may an ocean of good fortune pervade all directions.
Chosun tembe chene chuk